From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Pakistan's tribal belt is where Osama bin Laden is believed to be hiding. That's along Pakistan's border with Afghanistan. It's a remote region and an area that's likely to present challenges for the next U.S. president. As we continue our series this week on the conflicts in Pakistan and Afghanistan, NPR South Asia correspondent Philip Reeves has this picture of the tribal belt and the scale of the conflict there.
No nation has yet been able to assert authority over the inhabitants of Pakistan's tribal belt, though plenty have tried. That's why the place is a sanctuary for the Taliban, Al-Qaeda and their allies, and a launching pad for attacks on American soldiers fighting in Afghanistan next door. That's why CIA Predator drones hover overhead, intermittently blasting missiles at suspected militant targets. Shaukat Qadir, a retired Pakistani brigadier, served in Pakistan's tribal belt for years.
Close your eyes and try and imagine. It's like West Texas. It's a dry desert of mountains.
The tribal belt's about the size of Massachusetts, some 10,500 square miles. Like Massachusetts, it has several million residents. But it's high in the mountains, straddling the ancient trade routes that connect Central and South Asia. Pakistan's government doesn't allow foreign correspondents to go there, except on carefully choreographed military trips. Those who attempt to go alone don't usually get very far. This correspondent ventured just a few yards up the road to the Khyber Pass. Angry members of Pakistan's Frontier Corps waved their weapons and stopped the car.
Let's go.
One shakes his head, rolls his eyes, and draws an index finger across his throat. Taliban, Taliban, he says. It's pretty obvious what he means. If the Taliban get you, they'll cut off your head. These days, though, there are plenty of people around who'll tell you what they've seen in the tribal borderlands. They speak of a complicated war that's spreading from Afghanistan into Pakistan, even beyond the tribal belt, and is exacting a heavy toll on civilians. One of these people is a 26-year-old cobbler called Safras Khan. Safras is among hundreds of thousands of people driven out of the mountains by fighting. He's moved here, to Peshawar, to the back streets of a frontier city. He came with his wife and three small kids and a crowd of relatives. Safras and his family are from Bajur, at the northern end of the tribal belt. Safras says they left after the Pakistani military, under US pressure, began a big offensive in Bajur in August that's left hundreds dead. There were air and artillery strikes on the area around their village, which was under Taliban control.
Whenever there is bombardment, there is explosion and there is firing, the kids are scared and they cry, they scream, they stay inside their homes, and they really suffer so much.
Safras says when the Taliban first came to his village a year ago, they began sorting out long-standing local disputes using their own fundamentalist version of Islamic law. The people of the tribal belt are conservative religious Pashtuns, and many were glad to see the Taliban dispensing swift justice.
Initially, they were low in numbers, they were small in numbers, but then people started joining them because it was a movement in the name of Islam. So whether you die or you live, it's for Islam.
Safras says not everyone likes the Taliban. Some have even formed militias to oppose it. Safras sounds broadly sympathetic towards the Taliban himself, though he's not sure they'll win. He deeply resents the Pakistani army. As Safras speaks, Pakistani jets arc across the skies, almost certainly heading for the nearby tribal belt. Safras doesn't seem surprised. He says the planes and helicopters bomb according to a strict daily routine.
They would come and carry out the bombardment in the morning at 7 o'clock. Then they would go back to Peshawar, and at 1 o'clock they would return and then carry out the bombardment at 4 o'clock.
Safras is sitting next to a friend from his village called Abdul. Abdul uses a simple noise to illustrate another big worry in the village. American Predator drones. Safras worries about the kids.
The kids usually point the fingers towards the drones, or sometimes they hold the mirror to the drones. So we would take them inside because of the fear that there would be shelling on the kids.
The villagers have various names for the drones.
CD.
One name is CD planes. This is because they think the drones download and record all they see, like a CD recording machine. On the ground, the Taliban's busy closing any music CD shops it can find. but it can do nothing about the CIA's big CD in the sky. It's fair to assume that, among other things, these American drones are looking out for Al-Qaeda and Taliban training camps. Many believe these camps operate in the tribal belt, but not Brigadier Shawkat Qadir. He doubts whether the militants need tutoring.
Who the hell says they need training? They're like goats on these mountains. You know, I mean, it's they could train you and me. They don't need any training, except if it was to come to pitched battle, which is not what they're fighting. They've been doing this for generations.
The brigadier believes the Taliban and friends are not short of money, thanks partly to the opium trade, and they've got plenty of guns.
There are weapons galore in Central Asia. They're in the market. But it's the sophisticated weapons that are a problem. And they're laying hands on sophisticated weaponry. They are.
They also have some big weapons. This is how the militants respond when Pakistan's army goes after them. Last month, they destroyed the Marriott Hotel in Islamabad, Pakistan's capital, killing more than 50 people with a huge suicide truck bomb. There have been many other bombings, often striking at the heart of Pakistan's security apparatus with unsettling accuracy. Since July last year, nearly 1,200 people have died in suicide attacks. The Taliban's strategy seems clear. It knows Pakistan's new government is weak. It also knows Pakistanis tend to blame their own government for the suicide bombings. They think these attacks are only happening because their government supports the US. US cross-border attacks into Pakistan strengthen such views, especially when civilians are killed. For those fighting Pakistan's militants, this is a dilemma. You get blamed when you try to bomb them, and blamed when they bomb you back. Philip Reeves, NPR News.
Tomorrow, we continue our series on the conflicts in Pakistan and Afghanistan with a story about the leadership in Pakistan.